Our dream that we had for where we were going with this last year has continued to blossom into what it is today. So I'd also like to thank the city of San Francisco for having such a happy night all night. It was it was a grand experience to see the World Series. I called my husband last night after the last thing, and he says, "Is it so wonderful, honey?" I said, "Oh, honey, let me tell you how wonderful it is here." So in this presentation, we're honored to be here to get to discuss something that's important to us. In its foundational piece, we have always worked, as we started with my first visit was, I believe, in 1997, was that when we started with Sean from, she was at Florida then, now she's in the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and we worked on the idea of how is justice evident in kind of the care, the foundations of, and I have nothing to declare here. Well, I probably have lots to declare, but none of these we need to talk about. So looking at how social justice underlies community health care and public health nursing. So Jane Addams is a definition. I had cited our paper earlier, and Sean, or and Denise and Mary said, oh, let's cite somebody else for how we're going to discuss this. So I went back as far as in terms of looking at this, and Jane Addams, in her book, 20 Years at Hull House, talked about, in the unceasing ebb and flow of justice and oppression, we must all dig channels as best that we may, that at the propitious moment, somewhat of that swelling tide may be conducted to the barren places of life. So it is within the unserved and those who are disenfranchised where healthcare and public health nursing has emerged. And I'm going to blend these, the idea of social justice, with somebody who's only fresh out of graduate school can do, the theoretical model of Bourdieu, and social capital. So social capital, which I was inspired by Dr. Knipe to learn about, the aggregate of the actual or potential resources which are linked to position of a durable network or more or less institutionalized relationship and mutual acquaintance and recognition. Now, where I work at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, this would be graded at about a grade 23 for the consent form. But what it primarily speaks to is the understanding of how we as human beings are linked to networks of distinction, is the word that he used in French, where we are somewhat embedded who we become as we grow up, our preferences, the things that we are associated with, and how we are able to knit those together in the delivering of care vision. And some of the people we're going to look at in this presentation today, I'm going to talk a little bit about their social capital and how that influenced it. So Lillian Wald, one of the people historically, incredible woman who was really the first public health nurse, and she coined the phrase public health nursing. This is a quote from her. The public health nurse was what she wanted to describe as the work being integrated into the public community, and she talked about it being organic, that this is something in which we would see the organic connection between what we did and the outcomes where people would have equal access and opportunities. The interesting thing about Lillian Wald, too, is she was in medical school at the point in time when she went off to set up and work in the care of the underprivileged, and the quote, and I'm sure all of you have seen the movie, where she said she had a baptism by fire when a young child took her to see the mother who had delivered a new baby, and there was so much squalor and suffering in the family house that she went to, and she knew she could not leave without making something that would institutionally address the suffering, not only of this individual patient, but all of what the tenement was and how the poverty and what we would call it this day and age, the determinants of health, and how did those social determinants, what were the things in which she could address? Lillian Wald was, as we look at her social capital, a woman who had come from a distinct, a very distinguished family, a Jewish family, and she had very many things within her access to help her to fund and to go forward with things. She worked with the Eastern European Jewish immigrants and basically appealed to many of the elite, the social elite in New York, to help fund some of the projects she did in order to bring the things, job training, education to children, bringing the things that brought the healthcare of this community forward. Then Mary Breckinridge, another woman who, as when we think of the images that ideally call us to what we would embody in public health nursing, Mary Breckinridge, seen on this horse, does this later in life. She's married, has two children, and upon the death of her two children, asks for a divorce from her husband, goes to nursing school, and then she goes off to England to become a midwife, a nurse midwife, someone who is going to deliver babies. So she is at the fundamental bedside of people, looking at the most incremental delivery of care with people who are basically delivering children, but in an area of poverty. She established the Frontier Nursing Service in 1925. When I was first meeting Dr. Drevdahl, one of the things she used to think about was when she was young, she wanted to be maybe a nurse and a horse trainer. Well, she is a nurse and she has horses. But the idea of getting to be a nurse who rode into the darkness, helped bring health care, establish those things in the backwoods, really, of Kentucky. Mary Breckinridge was, at once, the unit of analysis was the individual, but she also took it to the societal level. When she was... I went to Annie a little bit too quickly here, but Mary Breckinridge also had the social background that she was connected to people of power. So the social capital I want you to think about with her was she had people like Henry Ford on the board. She had people of prestige who were able to help her find funding to go forward with the ideas that she had for the disenfranchised, things that were going to bring connections not only to the individual person that she saw upon that horse when she went out to meet the individual patient, but things that began to institutionalize and bring about healthcare at a social determinants of health level that could be realized beyond what just the safe delivery of a beautiful baby. Annie Goodrich, then the first dean of the Yale School of Nursing in 1923, Annie Goodrich is a very interesting woman because she has, she quintessentially brings forward what I think is we talk about in that movie, It's Complicated. It's sort of like It's Complicated, because when we see what she does shortly after the Goldmark report, which we're going to talk about in a minute, she begins to bring standards. She said, there was someone who gave a talk who said nursing schools were somewhat scuzzy, which is such a lovely kind of doctoral word, isn't it? But when she came in and started standardizing, there were programs where people could be certified in nursing with 10 weeks, and that was, you were a certified nurse. It was an apprenticeship model upon which we built the delivery of skills so that at the unit of analysis you cared for the individual, and upon years of practice you became the experienced nurse, but you could start out with those 10 weeks and be what was considered the standard of a good nurse. And Goodrich said, not so much. I think we need to have other standards. She also, though, comes to this with a very strong background of, when you think about her being at the school, she was the first graduate. That was one of the nice things of the graduate program. But I think she also, by establishing something in this era, she's very much somebody who says, we need to have standards. We need to have things that are measurable. And you know how we as nurses, we love those measurable outcomes, don't we? We love to have something we can say, this is the standard to which we hold it, the criteria which it will be evaluated by. And she brings that to us. The educational plan versus the apprenticeship model tries to bring together the science and the clinical status of what are the patients. And she has a quote where she says something similar to this. It is the most frightening thing to see the care of people entrusted to the hands of those not yet ready to rise to that occasion. Which those of us who work in nursing education, and actually my son is a senior at the University of Portland right now, and to hear him tell me the stories of him taking care of patients of very incredible things that I never saw as a student, I'm so impressed, and I say, are your teachers close by when you're doing this? It scares the heart out of me. And yet at the point in time when we consider these things, it is that transition of trust where we have the clinical expectations, the ability to understand social determinants of health. And in an example, my son is working with, I can't remember which saint it's named after, but it's the Catholic hospital in Portland, where they have, it's a regional area hospital, and they have very many underserved from the Hispanic community coming in who are very much in desperate need of care without insurance, and the sisters have said, this is our dedication, we are taking care of whoever needs health care. He has gotten to see diagnoses of things where I, in my prestigious university setting, might not ever see because they wouldn't get past the insurance clearance at the front. The sign, the Hill-Burton funds have been expended, is up the first day of January. So you want to know between December and January, when were those funds expended at midnight and between midnight and 6? It's just one of those kind of regulatory issues of understanding the service and what it means to implement from the unit of analysis of the individual to the societal level. And Annie Goodrich was one of the people, along with the Goldmark report, who came in and said, what are the expectations? Adelaide Nutting, who was a part of this report, said, Nursing has long asked, when it was in the apprenticeship model, has long asked for there not to be so many long hours of care. They were living in hospital dormitories, giving their service to the institutions on their off hours and being given their education. But she said, we have yet to regulate nursing to the degree it should, and if we cannot do it, we are going to have it done externally. So she called, along with the Goldmark report, for us to continue to standardize and to reflect on this. One of the outcomes of the Goldmark report was the Bachelor of Science as an entry into practice. Isn't that amazing? Look at this. I mean, what year are we in right now? It's most amazing, isn't it? The standards for nurses training was really not in place. There weren't things that said this should be what we have as a standard and we move forward. Of course, this gets complicated in the 40s when we have the war start and there's an incredible need for nurses. So hospitals, diploma programs, up their entries, rooms that were meant for single residency become double dorms because they have to produce nurses for the war effort. But 1948, the future of nursing, the committee for the function recommended upgrading the standard for an LPN with an ADN and the RN with a BSN. Does that sound reminiscent about what we have just heard from what was the unit of analysis back when Annie Goodrich founded what we should be looking for, and here in 1948, we're still calling for that entry to practice. 1951, the whole program is being reevaluated to go to the bachelor's level again. But the standards for nursing, did I go backwards? I did, thank you.
You're still going backwards.
You know what? It's because there we go. Thank you. The traineeships that were offered in hospitals were built upon the idea of nurses training. So when you would hear nurses speak, they would say, I got my training. Language is a powerful unit of discourse. I just heard Robbins talk earlier, and discourse is something that tells us about ourselves something. When you go to training, I have a nice little dog that I took to training, eh? And he learned very much how to be obedient, when to sit, and when to do what I wanted to say. Training has a very different implication than does education, academic degrees. My master's work was on built space and the effect of built space on nursing education. Nursing schools often didn't have dedicated space. They were given leftover space. When hallways were emptied, they became the nurse's dorm. I personally went to a university where my school of nursing was built. The new building was dedicated to us, had been a mortuary. And the downstairs where the viewing space was where we had our lectures on pathophysiology. And I used to say to myself, wow, just imagine what used to happen in here. But that was the affording of space, the institutionalizing of what it was to have education versus training was a transition that you see at the societal level. These are the trends that move from apprenticeship to academics. Pathogenesis, physiology, maternal newborn health and contagion, these are all the things that we expect and anticipate that nurses need to know how to do and how to assess. We want these expert opinions, and we have increments of analysis within the NCLEX exam to test for that. And we know that this is built upon this tradition of a transition from apprenticeship to what it is to be in academic practice. 400 hospital-based programs in 1900, this is just a little bit of a vignette of how this would go, 80 diploma programs in 1999. And when we look today and we see what Dr. Drevdahl and Dr. Canales are going to present, we see the transition. There are many ways in which the role of the nurse is complicated, and within public health nursing, when we look at the vision of who is inspirational and what it is that our role is of social determinants of health, equity of healthcare, serving the underprivileged, serving the disenfranchised. Many of these issues are recurrent themes, things that we're called back to. But the people whose faces we see are many of the people we were talking about. When we talk about how it's effectiveness documented, I went to the Global Healthcare Rights this morning lecture. One of the things they were talking about was the tension between what is a philosophical, ethical debate and what is that which can be legally mandated. They were talking about treaties and covenants as being something in place which gives us something we can measure against, which we say we have achieved this as a nation and we have signed and agreed to go forward on this. But when we have law as the absolute, this would be my assertion, and I guess I should say that this is my opinion and not the opinion of the House necessarily, but when we have only law as our guidance, we can fall short because there are many times in which law falls short of the philosophical framework upon which we should build. If you think that slavery was legal, It was a law that we saw you could own people. In Nazi Germany, what happened there was legal because it was within the framework of legal within that. Within nursing, we have seen many things change about what is in the scope of practice. How do we understand the ethical initiative to connect social justice with the care of our patients and what we need to teach and impart to our students of today? How do we bring an ethical framework that goes beyond what is the expectation of law or regulatory practice? What is the discourse around what we are expecting out of our students, out of ourselves? And what do we do to contribute the questions to the future? How do we understand how to build what is yet... Oh, thank you. That was my five-minute warning. What is yet to be discovered? So what are the educational standards and preparation? So the tension between clinical practice, that which was the apprenticeship, which was a model of caring and being at the bedside and being able to stand back. The standardization has led to increased skill and accountability. We can hold people to these NCLEX. People have to pass this. You can't practice without it. You have to have, some states have reciprocity, some not. You have to have certain scores. Nurses are educated and ready to enter professional practice that compensates them accordingly, and that, in fact, is where we have moved from the periphery. When we look at, there's a community healthcare worker program, because I work in cancer, that's one of the most complicated things now, that we have people in clinical practice, but very few people at the level helping people navigate the systems. Many states have started to institute community healthcare workers so that the role of someone who knows what to ask and how to help deliver care has been transferred down again. So I would say that in perhaps some ways what we have done in public health nursing is we have role confusion. We have brought in so many people that we are not sure who bears the how to equally share perhaps in that vision of being clinically expert, doing the understanding and implementation of social justice, and how do we bring people in to the care of public health nursing? My own son said, Mom, I don't know if I could afford it. I have a whole bunch of loans to pay back. And it's a good thing his parents helped him, or they'd be even bigger loans, trust me. The idea of how do you deliver care in that framework, and as you graduate, sign up to be in public health, what are we asking in society, and what have we as a society reinforced as what's valuable? So in conclusion, this is a quote from Lillian Wald, that nursing is love in action, and there is no finer manifestation of it than the care of the poor and disabled in their homes. It is to bring forward that sense of connectedness and engagement with people, with the discourse of who people are, and not the necessary isolation and disenfranchisement, which has happened in our healthcare system by somewhat of our own advancing in our own degrees, moving from apprenticeship and leaving the side of people who are in that